Hi, it's Tony. On today's show, we'll talk to Barry Zwarluga about the very real possibility of the Caps and Wizards moving to Virginia. We'll go around the NFL with Jason Lockenfour, and we'll get picks from James Carville and Jeff Ma. A full show, but first, commerce.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
No, for second year in a row, no one close to the Cajun. I was 19-1 on Kornheiser last week.
It was
Chuck Todd, no catch me.
He was 6-1.
That's what he wrote. He has these triple plays,
yes.
The quadruple plays.
No, he had one double play.
Well, he's counting the Heisman Trophy winner that he took at 12-1 odds.
Well, that's ridiculous.
He's getting 12 points for that. Look
no.
At this. He's taking this way.
No, that's
serious.
As the commissioner. No,
right.
No.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
We will get to all that later with Carville. You can't count the Heisman. Can't count the Heisman. Barry Zwarluga is on with us now, and we're going to talk about Ted Leonsis threatening to and saying he will move the Washington Wizards and the Washington Capitals to Virginia in a second. I just wanted to say this to make everybody aware of this. Everybody knows that when I'm healthy, I train with Helen, the best trainer in the world. Now, Helen and Uriel are the best trainers I've ever had. Helen's hubby, Brian, has written a movie, Merry Magic Christmas. This Sunday night is its premiere on Lifetime. 8 o'clock, Merry Magic Christmas. And this Sunday night, that's the best night in all of television.
Oh,
why
yeah.
Do you think Sunday Night Football is the highest rated show week after week in all of television by a mile? Because Sunday night, people stay home.
The Sunday before Christmas?
Yeah, people stay home.
Oh, that's
so
a great
try
spot.
To get to Lifetime or
week before.
Tape it. You can tape it if you have a... Do they still tape TV or
well,
with streaming you can't
DVR
tape?
It. DVR
whatever
it.
You do.
Yeah.
Merry Magic
it's not
Christmas
like you're in the TV business.
On Lifetime. All right. Barry joins us now. Here's the first question I have. You and I, we totally agree on this whole deal, but we have prejudices. We live in Washington, D.C. We cannot talk about this without saying we live in Washington, D.C. and want Washington, D.C. to keep these teams. I didn't know about this till about 4 days ago. I had no idea this was bubbling around. When did you learn this was possible?
So I had heard bubbling and, you know, probably 3 or 4 months ago. But that's really all it was. And I'll be honest with you, Tony, in a very irresponsible journalistic way, I was dismissive of it as kind of a... you know, a leverage play by Ted. Oh, he has to show the city that he's having talks with somebody else because that will strengthen his position to get what he wants downtown, which is $600 million, and he'd throw in $200 million, and he'd improve the existing arena that Abe Poland put there in 1997. And really, it's not an exaggeration, transformed a section of the city 100%. That is important. That's just a few blocks off the National Mall, that's right by the National Portrait Gallery that, you know, on nights when the Wizards and Caps are there, is teeming with activity. We obviously have Metro reporters who and other sports reporters who work on this. They, when I came to them with a tip late last week that I was hearing this, there was a date for an announcement. They were already in position and had done some work, but we did not have people like to do this stuff in the dark. They don't. It's for such an outlay and an impact of on the public. They want these negotiations to be in private. So getting it confirmed was difficult because even public officials kind of clammed up. We did end up breaking it on Monday, but that was only a couple days before the announcement. So it feels very, very sudden, even though the talks with Monumental between Virginia and Monumental began in February.
Is there any other reason to do this? Any other reason than money?
No, there's really not. And you'll get a lot of lip service about, and Ted is very good, Ted Leonsis is very good at being like, well, I don't envision this region as we should stop being so provincial and being like, I'm from Maryland and I'm from the district and I'm from Virginia. And those are totally different things. He has long described, when he went back a few years to try to get the Olympics to Washington, he kind of pitched everything from Baltimore to Richmond as like one big super city, and that's how we should think of it. And that's really not how people here think of it. There are loyalties and allegiances that run deep. But to your money point, Tony, this is a new model, and I point to the Braves ballpark in Atlanta, and I say in Atlanta, it's really not in Atlanta. It's in Cobb County, 10 miles northwest of downtown. It is completely soulless, but it is a moneymaker because the Braves were able to put their stadium in a place where they could develop around it, and that's hugely important to this project because Ted and the commercial real estate developer that's working on this will be able to invent a mini city out of nothing and profit off that, which in a perfect world, if you trust your sports owners, that money would be put back into the competitiveness of the two teams that will play there. It's MCI Center, that was the name a million years ago, at Capital One Arena downtown. The development around there, which has struggled since the pandemic, even when it was thriving, Leonsis was not making the profit off of that. So that's the model. I don't find it appealing, but I get where the way I've phrased this is I think that this deal could be bad for the district because they lose the two teams, bad for Alexandria because of traffic and people don't want that stuff there, and really good for Monumental Sports and Ted Leonsis because they've got potentially revenue generators that they couldn't dream of downtown.
I called him a villain on the air. I said this was villainy, and I believe that. What would you call it?
I think you're right there, Tony. I mean, you're stealing teams, anchor teams, teams that provide you 85 dates that are crucial to a neighborhood that, as I said before, really didn't exist before the teams came there, and you're taking it to a place that where you will profit from them. And, and who knows what will happen to that neighborhood, which is already teetering since the pandemic, when the two teams move out. Monumental is saying, hey, we're still going to have 100 dates there.
Really? Is Georgetown going to be there? Or is Georgetown going to move too?
They'll move the Mystics there. They'll do the concerts. And then, it's just a shell game because if you move the Mystics that you just opened an arena in Ward 8, the neediest ward in the in the city, you're stripping that community engagement from there to a neighborhood that you just said was not good enough for the Wizards and the Capitals.
So that's just like, I don't think anything will be there, okay? I think nothing will be there in a relatively short amount of time. This is worse than the Learners to me. And I was very condemning of the Learners for saying, we're going to sell now because we're in the business of making money and we're going to sell the team.
And I thought that was terrible because I think it's a sacred trust to have a team. And this is, to me, far worse. Far worse. Because you're just moving this team to a locale that's better for you and thinking you can get away with calling them the Washington this and the Washington that. I note that in watching the Wizards the other night, and they stink. And that goes to the owner, too. That goes to the owner. And he hasn't reduced ticket prices on this stinking team. Their logo is the Washington Monument. You've seen that, right, Barry? It's the Washington Monument. What's the new logo going to be?
On the day that this was announced, old people like you and me who get the print edition of the Washington Post picked up their post, and there was a wraparound ad on the front page covering half the front page for deals on Wizards tickets. The jerseys that the players...
They say district?
Or whoever, it said rep the district, and it had the diamond-shaped... map of Washington, D.C. And for people who don't live here, like when you see the outline of the district boundaries, like that means something to you here. That doesn't mean Alexandria. It doesn't mean Bethesda. It doesn't mean Prince George's County. No. It doesn't mean Arlington. It means the District of Columbia. And that sort of kind of trying to connect with the urbanness that the city provides, not the suburbanness that you know the burbs provide. It was just embarrassing that on that day they were announcing that we're taking your team and moving it out of town.
I wouldn't, if I were the Learners now, I always say things if I were this guy or I were that guy, if I had the power in the world, I'd padlock that building right now and make them play at George Mason University for the rest of the 5 years it'll take to build this thing. But if I were the Learners right now, I wouldn't sell my baseball team to him because I wouldn't trust he'd keep it here. I wouldn't trust him. I wouldn't sell it to him. Do you have any feelings on that?
Well, I mean, that's such a complicated thing because, you know, until 5 days ago, you would have said that the Learners were the least desirable owner in town.
Yep.
And because they said, you know, almost 2 years ago now or a year and a half ago that, hey, we're exploring a sale of the team and have not yet sold it and have left it in complete limbo and you know, for in perpetuity right now, because, you know, the way they do business is they value any property, in this case, the baseball team, at X. And if you offer X minus one, they will not sell it to you. So we're kind of stuck in hold there.
But meanwhile, they're not pouring money into it. They're not
correct.
Doing anything with the team. Yeah.
Yeah, you could get into the weeds and be like, well, they're not. It's probably they're a year away from being ready to go out and make a major free agent signing. But you're right. It's going to be another struggle of a season in the win-loss column there. The thing, Tony, and I think we've talked about this before, and I wrote this probably, I don't know, a year ago. Dan Snyder gave sports owners in this town
total cover.
Because he was, whatever you did, he was the worst.
Yes, you're
and
right.
And when he left, that cover is gone. And now, major questions about the stewardship of all these franchises are, you know, they're right there. They're right there in front of you. And this move is a real question for Ted. I would also say, Tony, that these plans are plans. And this, even though they had been working on this deal for 7 or 8 months, we're a long way from the ground being broken, let alone the teams moving out.
I will say this. This is important to note, I think. You can only be the governor of Virginia once.
Correct.
4-year term. Maybe you can come back after 4 more years, but you cannot establish the kind of dynasty that you can in other states. So Glenn Youngkin's out. He's done. So if this doesn't happen right away, you know, it may not happen at all, right? I mean, there's a political movement in Virginia that's different in other sorts of states. I also think, and I don't think that the mayor Muriel Bowser has been very good on this issue. I really don't. I suspect that she never imagined it would come to this. But there will be a football team at that RFK site now, don't you think? That will happen.
Well, the pressure is on her to make that happen because she has wanted her legacy to be, I'm the mayor that brought football back, and that is my defining moment. If she does not get the football team at the RFK site, then her legacy is, I lost the hockey and basketball teams, and I couldn't get the football team here. And now we have four major sports, only one of which plays in the District of Columbia. Like, I think the pressure, and I'm going to write this for over the weekend, is going up on the mayor, and that's not good.
I agree.
You don't want, I mean, we can debate whether the football team should return to that site, and we can't really debate it until we know what the funding picture would look like, but you don't want the mayor to be compromised and to feel pressure that she has to do this because she lost the other two teams, because that could only worsen the deal for the residents of the District of Columbia.
It's bad. The whole thing is bad. And in my mind, utterly unexpected. I didn't think Ted Leonsis, guy who was a Georgetown grad, and correct me if I'm wrong, they haven't moved Georgetown to Tyson's Corner yet, have they? I think it's still in the District of Columbia. To just, you know, run out on the city like this. It really is bad. It's angering, yes?
I am. I mean, I was surprised at how emotional I got about it, talking about it in reporting and talking about it on the radio. And I don't mean like tears, but just like quite fired up. Like this is, you know, we've talked about this a million times too, Tony. Like, owning a pro sports franchise is not like owning a mall.
It's
like
not.
People are emotionally invested in your product in a way that they're not emotionally invested in whether your mall is anchored by Nordstrom's or Lord & Taylor or whatever. There's a civic element of this. Ted Leonsis has often talked about the civic responsibility of being a sports owner.
Yeah, well, sort of empty.
He's trying to say that I'm going to be doing something great for the region. The backside of that is he's potentially making a move that could devastate a really important part of downtown.
He's putting a stake in downtown D.C., right in the heart of downtown D.C., as he lines his pockets. Come on.
Correct.
I mean, that's his. And, you know, fine. A lot of people say good for him. I'm not one of those people. Thanks, Barry.
Appreciate it, Tony. Thanks very much.
Barry Zwalugha has written very, very well about this issue and everything, really. We'll take a break. Jason LaConforo is up next, and we can talk to him. I don't know that we want to talk about that game last night. That was brutal. That was brutal. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Have I got a story for you? Now I was only 5 years old, excited and awake on the night before Christmas, my most favorite of all days. When lo, I heard a noise downstairs, so I crept out to catch a glimpse. And there I found my mother dear with Santa locking lips. Ho, ho. Son, it's me. Oh, I think my dad is Santa Claus.
Such a great film. Oh, wonderful. Tim Wildsmith, Nashville, Tennessee, writes, one of my highlights of the holiday season last year was listening to you, Michael, and Nigel laugh along with the song. I thought I'd send it in again. Still maybe a little too soon to play this one for Bootsy and the Hammer, but one day I hope they can enjoy it too. It's available on all major streaming platforms. It'd mean a lot if they added it to their favorite playlist. That's very nice from Tim. And he plays in Jason Lockenfora, and we're joined by Odyssey NFL insider Jason Lockenfora, host of the podcast In the Huddle, which covers the entire NFL. I don't really want to talk about last night because that was brutal beyond words.
Yeah.
Everybody knows that the coach at San Diego or whatever they call that team is going to be fired anyway because they underperformed. They've underperformed all year, and they have no chance without a quarterback. So let me get to another loss that I think is actually important in the greater scheme of things. The Miami loss over the weekend. What did that say to you?
It certainly raises some questions. The everything that went into them finding a way to lose that game, I think if you're inclined to believe that they are maybe that their highs are a little too high and are a little too sporadic. In other words, they can hit some notes, but they can't sustain them. And when they do hit those notes, they're usually playing against teams that are so far inferior to them that it's just sort of the perfect storm. And that when things get a little rough and when they're not that fully tuned up Ferrari and there's a sprocket out of place here or there's a lug nut that's too loose there, the whole thing can fall apart to a degree that, frankly, it shouldn't for teams that are really good in this league. So it raised concerns, just their energy level, their direction as an offense, the way everything just sort of torpedoed when Tyreek Hill left the field. I mean, that's a Titans team that had been a speed bump for everybody on the road. I mean, they've been one of the worst road teams in the NFL. And for them to be able to come back repeatedly and come back with help from the offense and the defense, like that was one of those collapses where you don't even really know who to blame most. Like Vic Fangio, Mike McDonald, McDaniel, what side of the ball, you know, which individuals. It was so pervasive and collective that I almost think that it does maybe speak to their psyche a little bit and them maybe being a little bit fragile. I have concerns about it. And look, the Jets have been a tough out for them forever. And we can go to that Black Friday game and you can look at the score and say, oh, well, geez, the Dolphins, you know, killed them. Well, I mean, Tim Boyle threw the ridiculous pick six. There was a touchdown for Mostert at the end where I don't really know what was going on there. But that was a tough game for the most part. And Tua's numbers against the Jets in his career are dreadful. And you can look at Herbert and Hurts and Tua the first time and Josh Allen. You know, the Jets have faced five elite quarterbacks. They've combined for 4 touchdowns and 10 interceptions against them. I think the Jets will be ready to play this game. I'm not buying Zach Wilson at all. But, yes, I think the Dolphins are vulnerable, and I believe that the Buffalo Bills are very live for me to win that division.
This is interesting. It's one of the questions I wrote down. Is there still time for Kansas City and Buffalo? Last week, you picked Dallas to win over Philadelphia, and they killed them. You picked Buffalo to win over Kansas City, and they escaped with a win. But you were right on both of those games. If I mention Kansas City and Jacksonville and Buffalo now, three AFC teams, and the Jacksonville game is against Baltimore, of course, in Jacksonville.
Yeah.
Which of those teams do you like the most?
Maybe Buffalo. I think Buffalo beats Dallas this weekend. If there's weather, great, even if it's not a true weather game.
Right.
I still like Buffalo in this spot. Dallas's efficiencies drop way off on the road. Dallas, I think Buffalo will be able to move the ball on Dallas in a couple of different ways. I think the Buffalo Bills are ready for this game, and I think the Buffalo Bills can see a path to redemption despite everything that happened before their bye. I just don't buy the Cowboys in these spots. Maybe they'll prove me wrong, but
right.
I think they've kind of run their NFC gauntlet, and this is not them in Western, you know, in Western New York in you know, mid to late December. I just don't think that's their jam.
Okay.
Jacksonville is going to have a hard time with the Baltimore Ravens. They played a 28-27 game down there a year ago. I certainly think the Ravens will do their part and score at least 27, 30 points in this game. I'm not sure if the Jags will. I mean, the way to beat the Ravens is to run. You can run efficiently and effectively on them. I just don't know that Jacksonville can do it on anybody with the state of their offensive line. You know, and look, I think Kansas City, all that whining, crying, pouting, you know, all that stuff that's out of character for them, I think speaks to larger issues. I don't think it's about Kadarius Toney and that particular decision and the officials and everything that went into it. I think it speaks more to their own realization that we're not what we once were. We more than ever need every creature comfort. We need everything to go our way. We need to get the calls. We need to be at home. You know, we need to catch the breaks, and none of those things are happening, and they're going to have to go on the road in the postseason for the first time, and I don't think they feel very good about that.
I agree.
So I think that's a team that is probably due for a one and done in the postseason, and look, maybe they win a game, but this Kansas City team having to go on the road and win multiple road playoff games in a very tough AFC, I don't fancy their chances. See, and I don't think they fancy their chances.
It's interesting. I mean, I know that I'm basing all of these questions around losses, because this year the losses are more prevalent and more determining than the wins, with the exception of San Francisco, I guess. But San Francisco lost three in a row. So I wrote a question down. What do the two straight Philadelphia losses tell you? And they got beat bad.
They have warts. They're not a complete football team. They're not as good, really, by most metrics as they were a year ago. They were really good at the most important metric, which was finding ways to win football games. That was a gauntlet that they had to run. And going to Seattle late in the season is by no means easy. But I just don't think this is the caliber of opponent that they've had to face recently.
No, certainly not.
And I don't know what the Eagles' pass defense will look like. You know, we're not probably going to see it really tested again here until the postseason. And what will that look like? What will they figure out, if anything? You know, I'm not the biggest guy in the world on their defensive coordinator. You know, I was a little surprised by some of the moves they made staff-wise. And they lost both their coordinators, and that's a big deal. And that's difficult to adjust to on the fly, but we're late enough in the year now where nobody wants to hear about that anymore. I do believe that they will become a more productive offense here now that they're not facing some of those calibers of defense. And Seattle's been the path of least resistance for a while here. I think this is a bounce-back spot for them. I think they win this football game. I'm not sure it's super sexy. I'm not sure it's, you know, they're going to look like the greatest show on field turf out there. But I think they will get – they showed you, I think, some things in the early in that Dallas game with some of the commitment to the run and including option runs and design runs for the quarterback. And I think you're going to see a little bit more of that in this game. And I think they're going to let teams know that, hey, you might have to defend us a little differently in the postseason than if you had played us in October or November.
Can I ask you, I was, you know, I did a double take that the NFL is going to play a game in Brazil.
Oh, sure.
I mean, what is American football popular on any level in Brazil, or do they think that they can get 65,000 to fill a stadium anywhere in the world, right?
Yeah, I think, you know, and look, they've done a lot of studies on this forever, and you do hit a saturation point in North America. So, you know, what is the great beyond, and more to the point, how much money will they spend? Yeah. And, yeah, I mean, obviously it's a huge population center. You know, you look at any look at concerts, you know what I mean, and some of the biggest grossing concerts of all time, some of the highest attended concerts of all time, they're in soccer stadiums in Brazil. You know, it's lust for money and profits, and it is what it is. I mean, what it means for the teams and who are the first sort of you know, who sent over there first to kind of figure it all out and have to deal with it and all that. Like, who cares? It could only be two of, you know, 32. The other 30 can sit back and watch. They're going to go everywhere. There's no doubt in my mind that there's going to be more and more games in Germany. We've already seen a point where I think we're going to get 8 games a year in London. That's going to happen.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I think even like China, man, if other people are playing footsie with China, these billionaires aren't going to not do it for some altruistic reason.
It'd be so great if that happened and I could say to Wilbon, stop telling me about the NBA in China. Shut up with the NBA. The NFL just drew 3 million people. You know, that would be interesting to me. Anyway,
yeah,
all right.
But they will continue to go to all quarters of the globe if they think they can, you know, grow their brand and make some money there.
All right, plug your radio show for us.
You can listen to me 2 to 6 on Inside Access on 105.7 The Fan in Baltimore, or tune in anywhere on the Odyssey app and listen to us in podcast form. You can check me out in the Washington Post. On weekends, anytime they're playing NFL football, on CBS Sportsline. That's mostly it. And the In the Huddle podcast also.
I got the outro on that. I got that. One small question.
I keep stepping on your toes.
One small question. Sure. Do you think Antonio Pierce can keep that job with the Raiders?
I do. I thought he could at the time he got hired, talked to a lot of people about it, wrote about it at the Washington Post. Yeah. Yes, and if you listen to what Mark Davis had to say in The Athletic this week, it's clear he has no clue and has no cogent plan for how this is going to go, and he's basically like, pray for me, I think I might get it right this time. It would not shock me.
All right.
If I'm not sure he's going to keep the coach and the GM, but it would not shock me if Antonio Pierce remained their head coach.
Thank you, Jason. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Have a good weekend.
That was Odyssey NFL Insider Jason Lockenfora. Make sure to follow In the Huddle on the Odyssey app or subscribe where you get your podcasts. We will come back with Carvel and Ma. We think, we hope, we never really know.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Well, you wake up in the morning, boy. You hear the ding-dong ring. Then you look upon the table, boy. You see the same darn thing.
This is Paul Evans with Midnight Special. James Carville being the only person we've ever had to select his own walk-up music. Most people know the Johnny Rivers version, but this is the original version. You had a great week. You were 6-1.
Do you want to do the read?
Oh, here's the read, yeah. This week's picks with James Carville and Jeff Ma, brought to you by FanDuel Sportsbook. Make every moment more. 6-1, 55-45-1, making money. But you can't put in the Heisman winner. That's a separate bet, isn't it?
No. At the beginning of the year, I said this guy's 12-1.
Right.
You know what you do when you bet $100 at 12-1? You get $1,200 back.
Right.
That's Chuck Todd whiny crap. And you can't count that without over-unders, without points, without anything. I never heard of a casino that didn't count a 12-1 bet.
All right, so then you would be 67-45-1. But let me just ask this.
I just think one of the bets yesterday was last week. I think we hit a double.
You had a double play last week that came in. You did. The only bet you lost last week was that sort of exotic halftime wager. That's all. Okay.
That's right. The Ravens first half.
I'm going to recalculate, but I think I'm going to lead it at 6-1 now, but I'm going to take it up to the appellate court.
That's fine. But let me ask you, this is the only other question I have.
Wait, I can't give you a stay, you know, but we'll yeah.
If Jaden Daniels had not won that Heisman Trophy, would you have been minus one? You wouldn't have been minus 12. You would have been minus one, right?
Minus one, of course.
Okay, all right. I just want
to
know.
You go to the racetrack, you see? And the horse is 12-1. You bet $2.
That's right.
If the horse loses, she lost you $2. Horse wins, she wins 26.
26.
Why? 12. No, 26.
24 plus the two bet. Yeah, okay.
Hey, man, I'm a loaf. You live another 5 years, I might get a first grade math.
All right, this week's bets. Go ahead. What do you got?
What I got? I got about...
You got Georgia Southern.
I got Georgia Southern.
I'll read it.
Minus three. I got them. -3 versus Ohio.
This is in the Myrtle Beach Bowl. You are the only person betting on this in the world. You know that.
Look, if you want to critique my betting, that's one thing. But when I'm 68-53, maybe people ought to listen, you know, to what I'm saying.
Okay.
And not the gallery coming in here.
Georgia Southern -3 over Ohio in the Myrtle Beach Bowl. What else?
We got WKU ODU. To you, that means Western Kentucky, Old Dominion. We got Old Dominion -2.
Do you want to tell people where that game is? It's the famous Toastery Bowl. ODU, I didn't even know they had a football team. I knew they had a basketball team. I didn't know they had a football team. You got Old Dominion -2.
Old Dominion -2.
Then what else?
I wrote it all out neatly here. Lost that, so we're gonna go with New Mexico State, Fresno State.
Yes,
I've been to New Mexico State like 3 times. Senator Minch used to have a thing that bring me out there. That's paid me pretty good, and I'm always full from it and never worth it down. But this year they're good. What's the line on that?
You're gonna take New Mexico State over. You're gonna go -3.5 over Fresno State in the New Mexico Bowl.
-2. I don't know where y'all get that.
-2. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
-2.
My line whipping on this show. And then Steelers. I got to fight Chuck Todd, Jack Ma, the pencil, the computer. Okay.
Let's go to the NFL. Go ahead.
Steelers and Colts. I got the Steelers +1.5.
+1.5 against Indianapolis, even though the Steelers are a second-string quarterback. Mitch Trubisky, you're okay with that?
Right. +3.5 against the Bengals.
Yes, you're off the. You would never have done this if Joe Burrow were playing. I know that, but you've got Minnesota +3.5 against Cincinnati.
LSU has 2 out of the last 5 Heisman Trophy winners and both are quarterbacks.
I'm aware of that. That was the first. Those are the first ones they've had since Billy Cannon. Before Billy Cannon was making plates to make money illegally, a long time ago, as we both know. What else?
You know, he had a great life, though. Browns and Lions.
You got Cleveland? No, okay. You got the Broncos and Lions, not the Browns. Broncos.
The Broncos and Lions. Take the Lions -4.5. John Payton is coach of the year, but he's laying the idea.
Okay, and what else?
Two times. Now, this means 1-2. So if I lose, I go down 2.
Okay.
If I win, I go up 2.
Right. So, This is Washington and the Rams, right?
Okay, over 50.
Over 50, even though Washington doesn't score. Okay, you like that bet. Okay.
Tell that little suck Todd, don't know this whiny little stuff of the other word. Miami can't hire a coach. It's not my fault. They always shoot into eyes and throw me at me. That's fantastic. What are you talking about?
Thank you, James. Best to everybody at home.
You bet. You bet.
Carville. Vintage. You have no idea how many words we had to bleep out of that.
Not even sure what made it in.
You know, we have so many words had to go in that. So many. You sit there and you know he's cursing, and so you write down the time and you go back and you listen to it. Some fabulous attacks on Chuck Todd. Absolutely fabulous. I think Chuck will laugh at that.
Oh yeah.
I think that's wonderful. We are attempting to get Jeff Ma at the moment. Jeff sends us something every week about things he might like to talk about. And this week, just as a preview, he said to talk about how they do bowl lines when people sit out. For example, Caleb Williams is not going to play with USC, right? Whatever bowl USC is in, Caleb Williams isn't playing. There was a kid, the second string quarterback at Texas, and this has an effect. The second-string quarterback at Texas went into the transfer portal. So he's not available for Texas. Texas is in the playoffs. This means that Archie Manning's grandson, Cooper Manning's son, moves up to the second quarterback. I was saying, Jeff, that you talked about how this affects the line. How did all the sit-outs, how does that affect the line? I mean, I think Drake May, right, from North Carolina, if they're in a bowl, he's not going to play. How does it work?
Yeah, I mean, the bowls traditionally have been hard to handicap, or part of the handicap for the bowls has been about the motivation, you know, predicting motivation. Some teams don't care. So if you look at, like, Georgia and Florida State, you know, figuring out who really cares in that bowl game is part of the handicap. But it's become increasingly more difficult with all of the opt-outs that are happening in these bowl games. And honestly, I'm not sure how much longer bowls are going to be a thing, because if you go down these games, you know, starting Saturday, even these, you know, non-Power 5 teams, because of the amount of players that they have that are entering the portal and because of the amount of transferring that's happening, these teams are just, you know, even these, like, non-Power 5 teams are losing a lot of their important players. And so understanding who's going to play. And we actually talked about this with Bud Elliott on Bet the Process this week. We go through every bowl game and talk about who's in and who's out. Like a good game on Saturday is UCLA-Boise State. But Boise State's going to be down to their third-string quarterback. UCLA may be also on their third-string quarterback, depending on whether Garbers, is their starter, can play or not, because their backup is in the portal already, and one of Boise's quarterbacks is hurt and the other one's in the portal. So this has become an increasingly difficult thing in terms of understanding how to handicap the bowl games.
Would you basically stay away from them?
I mean, that's the question, right, ultimately.
Yeah.
You know, we talk about this again because, you know, his numbers and his model don't take into account a lot of these player moves, and obviously when you have quarterbacks and it's, you know, you can quantify that a little bit, but when you start getting into 4 or 5 offensive linemen and defensive linemen, it's very, very hard. So, you know, again, like I think you have to try to, when you bet and you really are trying to win, you've got to figure out where you can find inefficiencies and where you think you can be better than a market. And a market is probably going to be better at predicting the impact of a bunch of these opt-outs. Hard for an individual or an individual model to do this. So, yeah, I think from a perspective of the pregame line, meaning like before the game starts and trying to figure all this out, it's probably very difficult.
That's what I think. Well, Carville just picked ODU -2 over Western Kentucky. I told him I didn't know ODU had a football team. I thought they only had a basketball team. In the famous Toastery Bowl, if you went through all of these, on Bet the Process. It had to be a 7-hour podcast, right? Had to be the longest podcast of your life.
It was two episodes where they were both over an hour long.
Wow.
I mean, have you looked at some of the names of these bowls, Tony? And have you seen that there's a Pop-Tart bowl where the winning coach gets to eat the Pop-Tart mascot?
No, I was not aware of that. I'm certainly not aware of that. There are too many bowls. Every team that's at 500 and some teams that are under qualify for bowls. But I'm not against the bowls because it gives us a week off. Because ESPN owns all these bad bowls. They own them all. So I'm good with that. You had a great week last week, 5-0. Coming out of a 4-1. You're 9-1 in the last 2 weeks. You're 39-34-1, and you're a rocket ship at the moment. What do you have for us for this week?
Okay, I'm going to start with the Vikings plus the 3 over Cincinnati. Obviously, Cincinnati has been impressive since Jake Browning has gone in there. But Minnesota's defense has been incredibly impressive. And they have an ability to really generate these sort of negative plays, and I think they will generate some of those against Browning, and I think they'll win this game outright.
Okay, so then I'm not going to worry about it, but Carville and Chuck Todd got 3.5 on that.
Oh, well, then I'll take 3.5 also.
I will give it to you. Go ahead. What else?
I'm going to take Denver plus the 4.5 over Detroit. I think this is a spot where people are expecting Detroit to get good or get healthy. Or
yes.
Be back to normal. They're at home. They score a lot of points at home. But I think this Denver thing is real, and I think the Detroit thing struggling is real. So I think getting 4.5 points with a Denver team that's exceeding expectations is a good value here.
Carville, of course, went the other way, and it was 4.5. Chuck Todd went the other way, and it was 5 with Chuck Todd. I think I agree with you because I'm looking at Detroit. And their last 4 games, they lost 3 and needed a miracle to win the 4th. They look like there's something wrong there. So we'll see. What else?
I'm going to take Chicago plus 3 over Cleveland. I mean, if you look at what Chicago's done, their defense is playing incredibly well. And I think that Cleveland will have trouble scoring against them. I think the Justin Fields thing is real, meaning they have incentive to win and figure out like how good he's going to be to figure out whether what they need to do with that number one draft pick. So I've been impressed with how they've played, and sometimes you look at these things and you think there might be a mirage, but I actually think it's pretty real because their defense is playing really well.
Okay. That just Wilbon will be so happy and just makes me nuts when that happens. Go ahead.
I'm going to take Houston plus the 3 over Tennessee. Obviously, we all witnessed that Tennessee sort of miracle on Monday night, and it was impressive what Will Levis did. But I do think just Houston is a much better team here that obviously is still in the hunt. Getting 3, I think Tennessee loses that game by 14, which it looked like they were going to. This line's probably closer to pick 'em, so like Houston at plus the 3.
Without C.J. Stroud.
Yeah, I mean they're a team that can, they have talent around him, so I think they will be okay.
Okay, what else?
And then I'm going to take Buffalo minus the 2 over Dallas. I mean, obviously we saw what Dallas did, but this is a spot where, Dallas has been performing at a high level a bunch of weeks in a row, and you get into a situation here where I think Buffalo needs this game. They're at home. It's less than a field goal. I just think there's a spot where Buffalo shows.
Jason LaCanfora felt the same way. LaCanfora was really good. He had Philadelphia losing last week and Buffalo winning last week, which was, a lot of people had one of the two, but not necessarily both. Yeah. And he likes Buffalo here, and I think some of that may be weather, right? Don't you think? Going up to Buffalo for Dallas and coming off a really big win, a certain emotional letdown, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's just, again, like the NFL, you're never as good as you looked the week before.
Right, or as bad.
And when you look for opportunities to find value, Dallas is, they look to be a very good team, but getting over that hump and beating Philly the way they won, now coming into a Buffalo game on the road, again, I'll take the home team that if you had made this line before the season started, Buffalo would be certainly more than a field goal favorite. So have we really learned that much this season that would make us think that this is in this spot, Buffalo should be under a field goal?
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Jeff. We'll talk next week.
Okay.
Jeff Ma, boys and girls. 9-1 in the last 2 weeks, 5-0 last week. We will take a break. We will come back with email and jingle. I am Tony Kornheiser.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Here comes Tony's mind.
Banjos. That's Joe and Molly Chambers. Thank you very much. Nigel, you want to do the Bethesda Bagel ad?
Always love the banjo. Bethesda Bagels, we love them. You will as well. Just go to BethesdaBagels.com for the location in the D.C. area nearest you. Then pop on in and you will be thrilled.
That's it for us today. Before we get to the mailbag, let me just say, pretty woman walking down the street. Pretty woman, the kind I'd like to meet. Pretty woman, I don't believe you. You're not the truth. No one could look as good as you. Mercy. That's Roy Orbison, who I once read that Roy Orbison, and he used to hang around with the Everly Brothers, and they played a lot of shows together in the 50s and 60s, and they used to refer to him as Ooby Dooby.
Ooby Dooby.
That was his nickname, Ooby Dooby, for Roy Orbison. Pretty Woman is, I'm not going to say that it's one of the best 10 songs of all time, but there is no question that it is one of the 10 most known
and recognized
songs of all time.
Yeah.
Roy Orbison, who only went out on stage in dark glasses all the time, and it had a great voice.
Oh, yes.
Just an unbelievably great voice, Roy
yeah.
Orbison. Pretty Woman got a second life because of the movie.
That's
with
right.
Richard Gere and
Julia Roberts. Yeah.
It's not as good as movie as people say.
It doesn't hold up. Yeah, it's all right.
It's okay.
But it's not the, you know, classic.
It's an okay movie.
Yeah.
But it's a great, great song.
It is.
Let me thank a couple of people. Jolene Wojcik not only sent a beautiful card to us, but she sent a bunch of things from nuts.com.
Yes.
She sent the pecans or the pecans or the pecans, whatever you want to do with it.
Pecans.
Yeah. And then she sent the milk chocolate gummy bears that are out of this world. And Michael has a bag to take home.
Jolene, Dad was in a sour mood today until he saw that package get open.
Turned it around.
Just great. And I got a lovely gift from a woman named Amanda Siegelson in Old Lyme, Connecticut.
Are they still doing the rock work?
And in Old Lyme?
Yeah, 95.
Yeah. And
a little bit of construction.
So yeah. She
it shuts it down.
Three boxes, well, three tubes of Crest toothpaste. And it is the original tartar control. And when I say it's the original tartar control,
it just says original flavor.
Yeah, original flavor. When do we think these
Russia,
are from?
Russia.
When do we think that these are from?
Well,
the 90s.
There's some debate.
The
well, there is something on the back that says 1988.
1988.
So, but I don't know if that's the founding of some company that made one of these.
We went to the Google machine and looked up old Crest logos, and this looks old. 1988 to mid-90s.
Yeah.
No, vintage. I don't know that toothpaste ever goes bad. I just don't know
it
that.
It hasn't been opened.
You yeah, know. There's no expiration
but
date.
But where
on
did
it.
You get this? What sort of store, Amanda, did you get this in?
Some people plan ahead.
And Amanda writes, so I decided that sending toothpaste was fine, but didn't come close to expressing my love, devotion, and appreciation of the entire Mr. Tony experience. Since my talents are more graphite-based, I've tried to produce something you'll find does you justice. Back in 2006, I sent another devotional offering, a drawing of Mick Jagger. Just know that you are both rock stars to me. Keep potting and PTIing. The world needs your voice. And she sent a beautiful drawing that I've asked Michael to put in a frame and put in his house in a very important position. so that the children know who I am and was.
Who Pop-Pop was. Well, they get to see you once a week on TV when you make it downtown.
Michael's angry at me because I went angry without telling
him. I think you should bring this picture and put it in your office. Yeah. Your new old office.
Yes. I did actually go to my office.
Oh, you went to the office,
I saw it and I said hi to everybody and it was nice. From Mo in Mount Airy. Hey, how are you? Long-time listener, first-time emailer, love the show. See, the Wizards lost to the Pelicans, dropping the record to 3-20. My question is, what do you think will be the three keys to the team's impending six-game winning streak as to get to 9-20? They're not getting to 9-20.
Nope.
They stink. From Ashton Wingate, Chuck and Roxy, episode 209 in Brooklyn, New York. Much like you, I was blindsided by the news that Ted Leonsis has decided to move the Wizards and Caps to Virginia. Does this mean that the Pants will be relocating too?
Probably.
Drew Allen.
Fly the flag.
Drew Allen, Drew in Virginia. Does this mean the Caps won't be playing Stonehenge tonight? From Shad, Virginia Wizards and Virginia Capitals followed the money. Yeah, he went for the money. Everything he said over all those years may not have been a lie at that time, but it turns out to be a lie now.
Yep.
It's just lies. He went for the money. And by the way, you know, Wilbon would say good. Wilbon believes everybody should take the live more money. Wilbon just says take the money. So not everybody believes what I believe. Ross Bridges, worst song, Sunglasses at Night. I don't even know that song.
Oh, Corey
Hart? Wear your sunglasses at night?
I don't know it at all.
Oh, Corey Hart, I believe that
Ross Bridges in Lexington, Kentucky.
That's true.
Sunglasses at Night.
No, it's stuck in my head.
Doug Green, Dr. Doug Green from Endicott, New York. Wow. About a 9-iron from Vestal, home to the university where we both got a doctorate. Wow. He's not the original DG, but he's from Endicott, New York. I think you will enjoy Dave Barry's book of bad songs. I didn't know Dave had a book out. When Dave wrote a column about bad songs in 1997, he was inundated with replies, making it his most read column. This makes his list quasi-scientific and perhaps more valid than your approach, no offense. You have yet to mention the winner or the loser of Dave's poll, because I didn't know we should call Dave. I didn't know about
this. You
should. Love it. It was MacArthur Park. I loved MacArthur Park. Written by Grammy Award winner Jimmy Webb and sung by Richard Harris, also a Grammy winner and two-time Academy Award nominee. A point Dave makes is that in order to be widely considered bad, a song also has to be popular. MacArthur Park reached number 2 on Billboard in 1968. One can argue that the lyric, "Someone left a cake out in the rain," was all it needed to achieve infamy. It's like a 7-minute song.
It's very long.
Disc jockeys used to love to play it so they could go to the bathroom and have something to eat, and the song would still be playing. Everybody knows this about disc jockeys in the 60s and 70s. They loved MacArthur Park. They pushed it and pushed it and pushed it. That I thought was a great song. Matthew, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. While it might not be the worst song of all time, it's obvious that the worst Christmas song of all time is The Christmas Shoes, which was later turned into a made-for-TV movie starring Rob Lowe. Yes, that Rob Lowe. I bought the movie from my dad as a gag gift one year. It proceeded to sit in our Christmas movie collection in its cellophane wrapper for at least 7 years before it mysteriously disappeared into a yard sale or landfill. From Ed Waldman in Fulton, Maryland. I didn't think I could add anything to the worst song conversation, but the 9-hour drive to Augusta, Georgia from Maryland to meet our new grandchild, a masculine child, proved me wrong. How about Convoy? Yeah, that stinks.
Ooh,
C.W. by C.W. McCall. Or how about Coconut by Harry Nilsson? I sort of found that charming, Coconut.
Not familiar with Coconut.
And a hearty La Cheeserie to my old friend Gary Robinson, who had a letter read last week or so. Does that count as a David Aldrich moment? From Jeff Lowe in Gaithersburg, Maryland. Not my first time writing, but a long time. I'm one pod behind, so apologies if this has been raised at the end of Wednesday's pod. And that would be last Wednesday's, I assume. I don't know. At the end of Monday's pod, Tony read and recognized the lyrics to "I Wasn't Born to Follow." Okay, so that was this week. I thought, hey, I know that song. What Tony did not mention, and may be surprised to know, is it was written by none other than Jerry Goffin and Carole King. I did not know that.
How about that?
The Byrds also recorded another one of our little-known songs, Going Back. I remember Going Back. Although she was a great performer in her own right, the list of her songs performed by others is a mile long. Back in 2011, friend of the pod Ronnie Neumeier produced a tribute show to the Byrds at the Ram's Head in Annapolis, where these lesser-known tunes were no doubt played. It was an amazing show.
And wasn't,
thank you for that, Jeff.
I Wasn't Born to Follow was in Easy Rider, was it not?
I believe it was.
Yes.
Yeah. Steve McKenna, Loyal Little, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I wanted to let you know that Fonzie misses Chatter. After hearing his name referenced by Chuck Todd, he thought he'd P.S. sit on it, Saliza. And oh, look at that. It's a statue of Henry Winkler with a Chatter shirt on it.
How about that?
I wonder where that is.
It's got to be in Milwaukee, I would think.
I guess, or Chicago. It looks like the canals in Chicago that
oh, yeah.
that I saw. Oh, that's, I'm sure it was just on one day.
I think the photographer put it there.
Yeah. If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
Now, if there's anything I can do for
you, I certainly hope you'll die soon.
Well, I certainly hope you'll die soon. Yeah.
Have I got a story for you? Now, I was only 5 years old, excited and awake on the night before Christmas, my most favorite of all days. When lo, I heard a noise downstairs, so I crept out to catch a glimpse. And there I found my mother dear with Santa locking lips. Ho, 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 he said to me, go back to sleep, this is just a dream. No, 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 said I to he, remove your hands from my mother, please. And he said, look, son, it's me. Oh, I think my dad is Santa Claus. Catch a wink with the thought of Rudolph and his friends upon my roof. I just had to see. So up the chimney I went, and there before my eyes, the reindeer and that glorious sleigh, and Santa, I mean Dad, about to fly. Ho, 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 he said to me, get back inside, it's time for me to leave. No, 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 said I to he, you need some help and your son works free. And he said, all right, come on, hurry. Oh, I think my dad is Santa Claus. We flew around the world to all the good boys and girls, left gifts under their trees, and we ate lots of milk and cookies. The next morning I awoke with a fright. Had it all just been a dream? But when I got downstairs, my dad was waiting with a grin and a wink. Ho, 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 he said to me, my secret's out, now can you keep it, please? No, no. Dad is Santa Claus. It's really true. He's Santa. I wonder if I'm gonna be Santa Claus.